Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh!
Let him play!
He wins. Great steak. Smells like poop.
Honestly, like if Urban Meyer wants to come to Connecticut, bring him on. I mean, come on. I'll take him too.
Nia Jackson, I think, weighs 280 pounds.
Oh!
Can we isolate that clip? Nia Jackson weighs 280 pounds. Oh!
Let her play.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big A to Z show. Good to have you with us from the Dave in the City studios in Southern California. We are continuing our anthology series, and we have really made some progress on this thing. I'm really happy. And we're going to bring in two of our favorite guests on this program tonight. You know them as the Golf Panel, Mike in North Jersey, John in Connecticut. They're both joining us here for this program. And we're going to get into not golf, because golf has been off the board for over a month. And it's not a good time to be a sports fan right now. I mean, coronavirus, as you know, has shut it all down. So we'll try to commiserate with that and then talk about some other things as we continue our anthology. I mean, the A to Z series has certainly been a hit. John will be with us. Mike will be with us. It's going to be great. And I mean, we're just going to talk. We're going to have a little fun tonight. I mean, having a little fun myself. And away we go. We continue our A to Z series. I'm not going to waste any time. I got to bring these guys on right away. So in our anthology, we are up to the letter I. Except that we're not. We're really up to the letter C, because I got like, I'm on like three and a half glass of Cabernet. We're actually up to the letter J. And that means it's time to bring our friends John and Mike. All the props to Pierre Saint-Jean for this terrific Cabernet. And I probably got about three quarters of the bottle in my system right now. Let's go ahead and bring it one by one. But we're going to start with Mike first, because more than anything, I'm happy to hear that Mike's doing all right. We've been talking off air through the chat, through the text. And Mike, it's been a while. Good to have you on with us. How's it going tonight?
I'm doing pretty good, Dave. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And thankful to hear that. John, we got you on as well. How's it going tonight, John?
Doing well, Dave. Glad to be back on the show. Unfortunate we have no sports to talk about, but I'm sure we'll make the best of this. And it's a good diversion from whatever else is going on, like having to watch the news or the same TV shows over and over again. So
yeah, I mean, I know there's a lot to watch out there, right? But has that started to work? Have you started to kind of run out of ideas on Netflix as well?
No, I mean, they keep, you know, bringing in new stuff. I mean, you guys have probably seen it all over social media, that Tiger King show.
Yeah,
like everyone was talking about it, so I was like, all right, I guess I'll have to watch it. So I finished that. Okay. Ozark season 3 just came out, so that's an excellent show if anyone hasn't seen it yet. But I've been trying to like pace myself with that one and only doing one or two a day to kind of spread it out a little bit. But there's always some kind of show or on, you know, some show is on to watch, but it's just, you know, you can only do so much, you know, after a while.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. I mean, you're right. I mean, I've just heard from two people on the Tiger, whatever it is, show today. It's crazy. Like, this is all within a day. Like, I'm hearing all the stuff about this Tiger, what was it? Tiger Prince, Tiger, whatever it was. But it's the biggest thing on TV right now. And to do that when a lot of shows have suspended production is pretty remarkable. So, yeah, let me know what you think of that later as you get into it. Mike, back to you. I mean, certainly, these are different times, and I know that, you know, trying to figure out what to do when you don't have golf to watch and things like that, I mean, it's a different world. Like, what have you been doing to try to get through these this sports dead time period?
Well, when this whole when the sports shut down, you know, it kind of coincided with me getting sick a little bit. Well, I mean, I had a few days there where I was okay. So for the days that I wasn't feeling well, and I guess, you know, I'll just get into it now and I'll tell you guys what this was like. I mean, I don't know officially that I had the coronavirus, but, you know, I was sick with a fever for about 7 straight days. It got pretty high at one point, up to 103. I had the dry cough. Well, it started off with a sore throat and then went into a dry cough. I didn't really have problems breathing. I never felt, although on 2 occasions I kind of did. I would say I originally got sick on late Tuesday night, 2 weeks ago tomorrow, mm-hmm. would have been when I came down with a fever. That first Friday after that, I had a little bit of, I would say that day, it wasn't so much that I was having trouble breathing as much as it was that there was a period of a few hours where it felt like I had to consciously take deep breaths in order to breathe normally, which was weird. Although when I tried to do it, I didn't have a problem. But then Monday, I did have a point where I was having difficulty like taking a full deep breath, and it was at the point where if I had gotten worse, I would have gone to the hospital. But luckily I laid down for a few hours. I just tried to concentrate on breathing and it subsided and nothing of that sort really came back again. So those were probably the scariest moments. The reason I would guess it wasn't the flu is that I got a flu shot at the beginning of February, and it seemed to mimic a lot of what the symptoms would be that you've read about online. But because I never had the problem where I would have to go into the hospital or into some sort of urgent care to get treated, I never got a test. They did open up a testing center at Bergen Community College. Is only a few minutes from my house, but it's been an utter shit show every day. In fact, now I think they stopped letting the general public use it. It's now only for, you have to be a first responder or a medical worker now to use it. So that really wasn't a viable option, especially when I wasn't feeling well. I wasn't going to sit there for, I wasn't going to get online for somewhere for wait there for 4 hours, starting at 4 in the morning to get a test when I could be resting up and trying to get better. So that was off the table. But to get back to your original question, what have I been doing? Well, as I said, you know, I kind of got sick afterwards. So really, I was just leaving on, you know, I actually watched a lot of NBA TV originally. They were showing some older games. They started off with, I think it was 88 Lakers Pistons. And then they, for whatever reason, did 6 hours of 90s Knicks. Now we know the 90s Knicks were big in this area, but I mean, in reality, they're not a historically great team. I don't know why they needed to do 6 hours of that. Then they got into the Shaq Miami Championship. So that was pretty fun to watch. So I watched that for a little bit, and then, you know, law school kind of started back up again with, we're online only now, and they actually announced this week that we're not going to get letter grades this semester, it'll only be pass-fail, which I am more than happy with, because my performance last semester was strong enough, and frankly, I don't think I would have done as well this semester, so that works for me. So now I'm kind of back into the grind of doing all the readings for that, and it's getting down to crunch time, because, you know, we'll have finals in a month, so because of that, I haven't, run out of TV programs or whatever to watch, but definitely missing sports over here in New Jersey.
Yeah, and boy, I mean, what you've described as far as your symptoms, it's really scary. I mean, you shared some of that with us on the text, too, and I'm really glad you recovered okay. Like, as far as I know, I don't want to mush it. God, not a time to be doing a vid mush, but still, I mean, it sounds like you're in the mend, so that's great. I think you took the right course of action. It's funny that like, not only the idea that you could be risking yourself, but you could be spreading it to other people by waiting in line for 4 hours, especially if they didn't practice the proper amount of distance between people in the line. How would you have even known at that point, based on what was going on at the time? So, I'm glad that worked out. That's the bottom line, Mike. I don't know. I mean, any advice you would give to other people who might be experiencing similar symptoms? Is it just basically just don't freak out too much and rest? What's your thought there?
Well, I mean, listen, I'm not a doctor. I don't have the requisite knowledge to really give out advice about this, other than all I can say is, if you can't breathe, you got to go to the hospital and you got to let them do what they need to do to fix that problem. But there is no specific treatment for, other than if you get some breathing problems, they'll put you on a ventilator. There's no specific treatment for this. So it's basically you treat it like you treat the flu, take your Tylenol to control your fever and just rest up.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're really blessed to be relatively young in our lives, where I think we can manage something like that. But what scares everybody is that the people older than that, or the people who are in their 80s, the people who are in their 90s, or even in their 70s, are going to be that much tough, like really, really tough for them. And I guess I'm just going to close with this comment. The one thing that you think about as we go through this is, how far are people into getting a vaccine? They've certainly been testing for them. I'm going to go swing it back to John just to talk about vaccine possibilities. You know, they're certainly trying, but it's just all over the place. And the coronavirus, COVID-19 is so new that they have yet to come up with something that will be effective and consistent for this kind of a disease. It's amazing. Like, it's so new, it's so spreadable, and you can even spread it without even being sick. It's really frightening. But what are you thinking in terms of the ability to get a vaccine in place for something like this? Or is it just too crazy to attempt at this point?
No, I mean, they're going to get one eventually, but it's not like, next week there'll be a vaccine available. There probably won't be one available for at least a year. So, but for now, like, they have to do all this, they call it the social distancing, like quarantine, lockdown, whatever you want to call it. That's basically what we have to do to kind of stop the spread of it and, let the sick people have the hospital beds and get the treatment and not clog up the emergency rooms even more than they will be, because even while people are getting coronavirus, people are still having heart attacks, getting into car crashes, cancer treatment, all those things aren't stopping. So it's just the strain on the healthcare system, really, is what we're trying to really trying to stop. And obviously, we don't want to spread it either, and just keep the amount of cases and deaths, unfortunately, to a minimum. And you start to read a lot of stories about people, that are not in their 70s or 80s or 90s dying, and it's a scary thing. I read a story tonight. Someone who was like 30 years old, coach of a local high school baseball team, like got the symptoms, and he like was dead in within a week. So it's definitely not something that you want to mess around with. So I haven't personally been affected by this. I mean, obviously I know Mike, and I'm glad that he's feeling much better. In terms of like my own like family or people around here, I haven't been affected yet. So I'm very grateful for that. And I'm just going to keep the routine of I'm able to work from home, which is nice. I'm number one lucky enough to have a job where I'm still employed and can still work from home. I think it's someone said it best, like, you're calling on all Americans to stay inside and basically sit on their ass and do nothing. I think we can do that for as long as it takes. I've just been going out to in my neighborhood, there's not that many people in terms of like running into somebody basically. So I can go out for like a walk, and it's kind of a wooded area. So I can like go out for a walk or run and not like go into anybody. So that's kind of a nice thing to do, just to get some fresh air every day. And then like going to the grocery store, it's like at some point, I don't know, should I like not be doing that? I mean, as it is, I'm already going in there like once a week and, wearing gloves and doing all the precautions that you take. But like, if the cases keep rising and rising and rising, it's like, do I really want to take a chance? Like that you have to get that box of cereal is what ends up killing you. Like, I don't know. It's just, it's a definitely a crazy situation. Certainly, you know, unprecedented and something that, you know, we're never going to see again in our lifetime.
Right.
But yeah, to answer your original question, I mean, they're not going to have a vaccine for this for at least a year, I would think. I mean, that takes a long time to develop. But in the meantime, they can certainly try to find like effective like treatments, like, you know, that drug that Trump was touting. I guess there's some studies going on with it. And like I saw a report that they could take plasma from someone who's already recovered and give it to somebody who's kind of like going through the stages. So, you know, they're going to find different treatments and way to and ways like to make people like recover and feel more comfortable. But I think a vaccine's a long time away. So we're just going to have to keep doing what we've been doing. And, you know, hopefully they'll get some of these treatments more readily available for when, you know, we'll get through this phase of it. And hopefully the summer will start kind of getting back to normal. And then they said it's going to return in the fall and towards the winter, and hopefully we'll be more prepared for it then.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps it will, but perhaps also that it won't be quite as large and as strong, because as you said, we will have an idea what to do. We certainly didn't this time, and that goes for everybody, honestly. Some countries have addressed it better than others, but let's not get into that. Obviously, that's been talked about to death. But yeah, all in all, I couldn't have said it better. You know, it's great. You have a great luxury living in Connecticut. And I mean, when I go out to run, everybody's on the street. I mean, I can't go even a block without running to somebody else who's also running or pushing a baby stroller around or something. So I tend to have to run around people so that it can keep that 6 feet distance when I do my run. So I'm still doing it. I mean, I got a little worried last week when my asthma started to act up, but I got a new inhaler and started taking that a bit. And that has toned that down, so now I'm okay again. But it's always interesting walking around, running around, because there are people in the streets trying to do the same thing. I mean, you get it. Like, everybody needs to exercise. So, you know, with a lot of people homebound, home-ridden or kind of stuck at home, basically, to work from home. That's what will happen. You'll have a lot more people in the neighborhood. I, too, have the luxury of being able to work from home, so that's really nice. It's a combination of Zoom and Windows Remote Desktop. It helps me get through, you know, do my work. So that is kind of nice. I feel bad for those who don't have that luxury. And it does make you think about, like, you can only imagine, right, Mike? Like, if this had happened, like, 30 years ago on the same scale, and we didn't have the technology that we do today, like, even the cable TV wasn't as big, so I can't even imagine what would have happened by then. I mean, I think that is like the silver lining in this, is that we have alternative ways to get our work done and things like that. But Mike, speak to like how our technology and our society today actually contributes to getting by in a situation like this.
Yeah, well, I think you said it. You know, obviously 30 years ago, we didn't have, There might have been early stages of the internet, but I'm not sure of the exact timeline on when it was invented or when we went online. But obviously, there wasn't this basic instant connectivity now that everyone has that allows people to work remotely or go to school remotely. Because, you know, if you think about it now, it's like you wonder how much they could have shut down 30 years ago just because the economic activity would have ground to a complete halt. Now, obviously, the way I think is that you have to put the economic side of things on the back burner here if it's going to save people's lives. But you do wonder that with the technology 30 years ago, it's like, how far could they have gone with this social distancing and the quarantine requirements? Just because at least now a lot of people can still work through remote online access, and obviously that wouldn't be possible 30 years ago. And for me personally, it's, you know, I don't know how they would have been able to continue the semester of law school. They might have just said, hey guys, sorry, but you'll all graduate 6 months later than you originally anticipated. There's nothing else we can do. So I guess you're right. It is a silver lining that we're able to be connected now in a different way than we were even a generation ago. And it's allowing us to continue our way of life more so than would have otherwise been possible back then.
Yeah, and I'm very thankful for that as well, because not only do you maybe you get a little bit of reprieve from the commute on top of all the other things, but just the idea that you can continue to make a living and not have to risk losing your job. I was thinking, what would I do if that was the case? And you'd probably have to take another job. And you'd have to take another job in specific things, because a lot of stuff would have been shut down by now. So I was thinking maybe I'd have to take a job at the grocery store or the post office or something like that just for the meanwhile. And certainly they need help, but that would have created so many more challenges. And let me stay with you for a sec, Mike. What is it like to attend a class online? What do you use? Do you use something like Zoom? Is it just a webinar? Is it just like a video that you watch? What is your method for getting your class online?
So there's a couple different programs that are being utilized right now at Rutgers Law, which is we have Canvas, which is like it's a system that like the professors would put their syllabuses up, the assignments up, all that other stuff. But there is a conference feature for that. So what's happened is three of my professors are using that system, and then another one is using a thing called WebEx. So in all of the classes, what's happening is none of them are like having all the students on camera just because the bandwidth is too much. So what's happening is the professors are coming on and basically trying to do the class. Now, it's not exactly the same, just trying to cold call people, which is generally how law school works, is you're supposed to have read a certain case for a certain day, and the professor will randomly call on someone and like quiz you on certain things, and that's kind of how you go back and forth. That's kind of how they teach you in law school. Some professors stray a little bit from that, so there's less cold calling, there's less overall interaction. In my property class, the professor's like cut down his actual online classes. Normally class would be three times a week. He's only doing two meetings a week. The other professors are kind of trying to do things as close to what they were doing as possible. So three classes a week, still going over the readings. But yeah, it's not quite the same. And I'll tell you the biggest effect it's having on me is that, well, I'll say one thing that's nice is that I don't have to commute to Newark now every day, which would take 45 minutes in the morning at least, so I can sleep later. But, you know, I've been fortunate that I've made a lot of friends my first year in law school. And just with all the long hours you got to put in, just seeing them every day and having their company when you're trying to do work, it helps you get through the day. So trying to do the work on your own where you're isolated and you have, you know, it's more difficult to go over it with other people, like in groups. That part's been difficult. But there is a little bit, a lot of the stress has been taken off now with this pass-fail grading system, because realistically, no one's going to fail. Maybe one or two people might. So, you know, we're all getting passes, basically. As long as we just honestly do the work and study for the exam, we're going to be okay. So it's a mixed bag. Obviously, I would not want to continue doing this for the entirety of my law school career. I don't know how tenable it would be.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, no matter how good an online system can be, it cannot replace the interactivity and the immediacy of working inside of a classroom. So I completely understand. It's just true of anything. Like you can make the TV experience as good as it could possibly be, but even at that, what you don't have is a third dimension, and you also don't have like the sound of it. But that's just for sports. But like if you talk about school, it's a similar idea. So the feel of being there certainly can mean something. But it's nice that you have something, right? Like it does kind of help you bridge to the next semester or bridge the next step. I think we're in the spring semester now, so when would that end, by the way? Like when was it originally scheduled to end?
What do you mean, just the semester in general?
Yeah, like I assume it's still going to end at the same time, but when does it normally?
Nothing changed with that. So what will happen is my classes will end at the very end of February. Then I have three final, I'm not February, excuse me, April, mm-hmm. the very end of April. Then I'll have three final exams. So I think they're the 5th, the 11th, and the 15th. That sounds right. So May 15th, middle of May, I'm done.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds familiar. Like, I think when I was a Cal Lutheran, that's about when we finished, usually early May. About May 10th, May 15th, about right around there. So I miss the semester system. I mean, where I work now, I mean, we have the quarter system. Even though I'm staff, it does make some of these school years last longer. But anyway, yeah, John, I mean, where you work, do you have a large staff? Do you guys do meetings? Like, what would that be like?
No, I work for a small staff where I work. Only 5 of us, so it's easy to hop on. We don't do Zoom. We do have a Zoom account, but we don't use it for those kind of things. But we have, we use like Global Meet for conference calls. We have like at least one a day, and then just connect via email and text and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. But our physical office is closed. And like without, you know, describing exactly where I work or what I do, basically it's like we have clients calling the office. And, you know, we had to leave a message basically saying like, we're still open. However, it'll be a delayed response on a phone call. We didn't really want to like forward calls to the office to someone's cell phone, just because it wouldn't, you know, it just wouldn't, like, what if someone calls the office at like 8 o'clock at night? You're not going to want to answer your phone at 8 o'clock at night for work purposes. So basically we just have a message set up saying, if you call, we'll get back to you within 24 hours. We get a dictation of voicemails and we can listen to the voicemails, obviously, like through an email, and then just forward it along to the appropriate staff person. Or like we just tell people for a more immediate response, just email someone individually. And it's like, we're always checking that. So, honestly, like I feel like one thing that'll come out of this is a lot of jobs or a lot of organizations will look more into doing more remote work. Because so far anyway, like through 2.5 weeks of this, like we haven't lost any productivity at all. I'm not saying that our organization is going to go completely remote work going forward when this is done, because there is something to be said about, like, you know, obviously team building and having a staff and camaraderie and all that kind of thing at an office. And there are some things that like we legit can't do from home. Like, you know, I can't write checks from home. I can't do a bank deposit from home. Can't do those kind of things from home. So like our physical office is still open. So we have to go there at least, or someone has to go there at least for an hour or two a week to kind of do those things and check the mail. But for the most part, you know, we're still operating very efficiently. And I imagine, like I was saying, it's for a number of companies and businesses, I imagine that, you know, they might relook at maybe doing some work remotely, or if that could be like a cost savings for them, because it's so far anyway for us, it hasn't really been much of a detriment in terms of you know efficiency in getting work done. So it's worked out so far.
Yeah, that's a real blessing, John. That's really great. And so with that, you have the different lifestyle. Do you enjoy getting up and just walking over to your desk in order to go to work rather than driving to work?
That's crazy. It's like I laugh. All right, I'm going to go on my morning commute now. And I literally walk like 15 feet from my bed to like my desk with the laptop and everything. But it's crazy. Like I usually wake up, you know, like 2 hours before I would have to go into work and just like relax and, you know, eat breakfast, take a shower, those kind of things, watch a little bit of the news. Like now I literally get up like 10 of 9 and just like stumble over to my desk and just like, all right, I guess, you know, guess it's time to go to work. So then yeah. I'll like, you know, I'll check a few emails, and then I'll go into the kitchen and like get breakfast and coffee and then put on the TV. And then like, it's like an hour of getting warmed up basically before like actual, like really work is done. But it's definitely, I get a lot of work done during the day. I'm not saying I don't. It's just, it takes you a little more to get going in the morning when you're working from home. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's very different. One thing I took away from my first 2 weeks working from home is that is that I sleep a lot more now, because that hour that you're spending, you know, getting up, getting ready, getting to work, it's like you don't have to do that anymore. So it's like similar.
Right,
to you,
exactly. Like,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, you could be in your pajamas all day if you want. Like, I swear I haven't put on like work clothes on in 2 weeks. I just basically wearing like sweats or jeans or whatever. It's like saving on laundry too, because you don't have to, you know, you're not washing as much many clothes. So
yeah,
it's crazy. Like I don't, like I said, you get up like 10 of 9 and kind of take it from there.
No, it's a good spot. And Mike, I mean, you're not going over, or I guess because you can do this online, it's a similar spot for you, but, were you commuting down to law school when it was in regular session?
Yeah, I would commute from here in Bergen County down to Newark, which in the mornings, which inevitably I'd have to go maybe a little bit just past peak rush hour, but still there'd be a lot of traffic. That'd be about 45 minutes, depending on the day or just how the traffic was. Getting back wasn't as bad, because I would normally make it a point to either stay late enough that you're past the peak of rush hour traffic, people leaving from work, or depending on what day it was or when the classes would end, I could leave in the middle of the afternoon before it would start. So honestly, the commute wasn't that bad, but, you know, it would take up, you know, my first class would be at 9:30 and I'd be waking up at 7:15 in the morning and basically not having time to do anything but get ready. And I'd try to be out the door by 8:15 or 8:30 at the absolute latest. So, you know, now I'm setting my alarm for 9:10 in the morning, waking up and just walking over to my desk in my bathrobe and going to the first class. So that part's been better. And I do absolutely agree with John that a long-term effect of this is that you're going to see a lot of companies realize that, hey, we don't lose that much productivity from this at all, if any at all. And it's going to be cheaper to run things remotely. So you're going to see more of a situation where people work from home more regularly. The big thing we're losing in law school, though, besides the back and forth you get in classes, is that, listen, throughout my undergrad career and whatever, I was always an individual learner. I learned things on my own. I got things on my own. I studied on my own. In law school, with just the complexity of the material and the amount of material, you need people to bounce ideas off of. And just not having that natural thing every day it's definitely causing a negative effect on the learning experience. So I don't think online law school is really a practical long-term solution.
I understand that. I mean, I've worked with graduate students for a long time, and this goes back to when I did my original, my last job at UCLA, where I dealt with where I was actually embedded in several departments, and they had a number of grad students in each one, and there was a lot of collaboration, so I completely understand that. That would be tough to not have that ability. Yeah, you could say, well, let's just set up a Teams or let's set up a Google Hangouts or something to do the collaboration. But it's definitely not the same, because it's not as spontaneous. Like, sometimes you just have an idea and you go up to somebody that you know, like, hey, what do you think of this and this and this? And you draw it up on the whiteboard. There's a lot of spontaneity that can really be a very, very healthy learning and growing environment, Mike. And so I completely see that being like much tougher in your spot. Yeah. So let's reflect a bit on the golf season that was, because as far as I know, I feel like we're done. Like, I mean, do you see anything being played this season? Like, I think we're already through the U.S. Open. The Open Championship is all that's left over. The PGA would have been in May, so yeah, I can't really see that being played either. I'll start with John. Like, I think what we can say is, like, what did you think of the season this year? It was only like 2 weeks, like a month and a half. But
Yeah, I mean, we were going into the best part of the season too, or like the players' championship. They canceled it. Honestly, like, I understand they had to cancel it the way things were going, but they could have played that tournament, you know, for that weekend. I mean, at that point in time, like, all those players were, I'm assuming all those players were not infected, or none of the caddies were infected. They could have played that tournament, and it would have been perfectly safe, obviously with no fans. But I mean, the optics of that would have just been terrible with all these other sports leagues canceling and whatnot. But they could have played that. But anyway, yeah, I mean, the season, I mean, it feels like years ago having to talk about the golf season from what, January 1 to the end of February, basically, yeah. Or middle, you know, well, early March. Yeah, seriously, like,
I know.
Like, each day is like a year now. But yeah, I'm trying to think of, like, who won some of these tournaments to start the year. You know, Leishman won in Torrey Pines. In San Diego, let's see here. You had Tyrrell Hatton got his first PGA Tour win at the Honda Classic. That was an exciting event. Those two tournaments in Florida that just right before everything got shut down, very, very high scoring. Like, the wind was a huge factor. Very high scores with at the Honda and Bay Hill. I actually had to pull up PGAtour.com because I forgot who won some of these. I'm sorry, Sungjae Im won the Honda Classic, and Hatton won Bay Hill. My bad. A fun house on me. Patrick Reed had the win in Mexico. He made, like, a dramatic putt on the 17th hole. It was, like, a really, really long putt to win it. I'm just going backwards now. Adam Scott won at Riviera. That was a pretty exciting tournament, if I recall. Webb Simpson won the Phoenix Open. Really a come-from-behind win. Like, Tony Finau just pretty much gave that away at the end of the event, and Simpson won it in a playoff. And then Nick Taylor won at Pebble Beach. They always seem to get, like, kind of – you either get a huge star or, like, a no-name player winning at Pebble Beach. So he got that win. And then that's basically it. I mean, we don't – you know, there's really nothing else much to say from the start of the – in January, I guess. Oh, Justin Thomas won the – tournament of champions. I mean, that feels like, honestly, I don't remember anything about that tournament. It feels like 20 years ago. So I'm not even going to count. I'm just looking at one. So we have every event is canceled until May 21st. So the next scheduled tournament that's not canceled on the PGA Tour is the Charles Schwab Challenge. But the way things are going, I imagine the next, like, announcement will be all tournaments up until the U.S. Open will be canceled. So that would be until June 14th. That'll probably be the next announcement. I'd be pretty surprised if that wasn't the next thing, but I guess we'll see. So theoretically, maybe the first tournament back on the PGA Tour might be the Travelers Championship in Hartford, Connecticut, or Cromwell, Connecticut. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. In terms of, like, the rest of the year, I think the Open Championship will be played. I think, as scheduled. I mean, that's July 16th. I mean, God help us if it's July 16th and we still have, like, this horrible, horrible pandemic around the world. I mean, you know, I know we don't want to talk about, like, what countries are doing things better than others, but I think the UK is doing things probably better than we are at this point. So I would imagine that's probably going to be played on its date. I won't say 100%, but I would be leaning towards more yes, that they're going to be playing on schedule than no. In terms of the calendar for the rest of the year, I have no idea how that's going to look. You would assume they'll try to play a major in August, September, and then maybe the Masters in October. I don't know. I don't know if the PGA Tour will want to try to fit in some of these other events that got canceled, or they would just go with, like, this short schedule of the rest of the year. Like, say they did come back at the Travelers, just to throw a date out there. You know, and they just did, like, 10 tournaments the rest of the year. I don't even know if they'd be that many. I have to count them out, but say it's probably around 10, like 10 regular events and then the four majors, or if they'd want to reschedule some of the ones that got canceled for the fall. I have no idea. So that's, you know, above my level of, you know, trying to figure this stuff out. I'm sure the tour has all sorts of contingency plans, but, that would be my guess that Golf will resume maybe late June, early July. Not going to say if there's going to be sand there or not. But, you know, I do think they'll end up playing probably around the middle to end of June, and we'll see how it goes from there. But I do think they'll play eventually in the middle of the summer.
Well, I mean, I've been a little more optimistic about this than one might think, and I certainly don't think anything in May seems realistic, but June does. And I think late June feels very, very tangible to me. And things can change with every week, but things certainly looked a lot bleaker a week ago. And not that things are not bleak, but I'm just saying, like, they're, you at least see some kind of semblance of where things could be going. So I've not ruled out June, late June as well. So yeah, we'll see. I think we will see. I feel like the U.S. Open would be unlikely, but the Open in the U.K. feels pretty likely. I think a lot can happen between now and then, but certainly, if like a week feels like 10 years, and it does to me too. Like that's the thing about working at home. It's like the days just feel like they blend together. So you just don't know if sometimes a week can feel like a month, and it really has. I've only been doing this for like 2 weeks, and it feels like it's been much longer. So let me go to Mike. Same question to you, Mike. I mean, first of all, what did you think of the golf season so far? What little we saw, and what do you see as far as the future?
I think the underlying theme of the golf season, frankly, was Rory McIlroy getting back to number one in the world. Now, it depends on what you want to look at as constituting the golf season, because technically the season did start in September or whatever with the Dopey Fall Series. And if you go back then, you had Tiger Woods win that event in Japan, which I will admit, he looked really good in that event. Now, of course, he did not look so good at all in his last couple of appearances. How much he was injured, I'll leave that up to you to speculate. How much is that just him being old and inconsistent? Who knows? But McIlroy won the WGC in China. And the thing is, it's every time he's teed it up, he's had a chance to win. But on the other hand, his performances on Sundays have just frankly not been good at all. Like you can go back to Riviera, where I forget if it was the third or the fourth hole, he was in the final group. And he made the seven on the hole where he like hit it over the green, and the green's basically up on a plateau. And then he tried to hit his pitch back, and he didn't get it back on the green at first. It rolled all the way back. So like he makes a seven and it drops him out of contention. He never gets back in. Adam Scott wins that one, obviously. And then at Bay Hill, he does like the same thing where he dunks his third shot on that par five that like wraps around the lake after he takes like the most insane line ever off the tee. And everyone's like, oh my God, with how much of the water he cut off. And he ends up making a double bogey there when he has a wedge in his hand 90 yards away for a third shot. So it's really been a tale of, it's been two sides of the coin for him. Every time he tees it up, he has a chance to win, which, frankly, we've never really seen him play where that's happened. He's always been prone to a little bit of inconsistency. But at the same time, he's not getting the job done on Sundays. And we can hear all this stuff about, you know, look, Rory definitely seems like he's an intelligent person. But sometimes being an intelligent person doesn't necessarily lead itself to being someone who is successful in the clutch. In golf, frankly, I think a lot of the successful players, the ones that don't break under pressure, don't think that much about anything. And as a result, the thought of failure or whatever never gets into their head. And then you have people like Jack Nicklaus, obviously, who was just a very mentally astute person and knew what the pressure was going to do to him, how to react to it, how to compensate, and all the other stuff you need to do. So, a big accomplishment for him to get back to number one in the world with how well Brooks Koepka was playing. So obviously that's not insignificant. The world rankings are something that years ago, I would kind of say, well, you know, who cares? Do they really matter? And I still think week to week, if you look at it and then you look at who's number one in the world, I don't know how much it matters. But I do think guys or players that are able to be at number one for significant lengths of time, I don't think it's an insignificant thing for your resume when it's all said and done. Obviously, it's nowhere near the same as winning a major tournament. But, you know, when you look at Greg Norman's career now, and you want to judge, you say, yeah, only two majors, but he was number one in the world for 300 weeks or something like that. So maybe that gives a more accurate assessment as to his dominance at one point during when he played the game. So I do think the world rankings have some importance. So that's a good step for McIlroy getting back to number one. As for the golf season, where we're going to go going forward, you know, I am a lot less optimistic than I was even a week ago. It just seems like the modeling for how long this is going to take with the flattening the curve, I don't know if we're going to be back at all this summer. I do think we'll be around in the fall, and I do think you'll get the major championships in. The only one that I could see now, I would have said a week ago, yeah, they'll play the Open, but now apparently Wimbledon's going to get canceled, and Wimbledon's basically the week before the Open when it ends. So I think that is obviously not a good sign for the Open being played on time. So I don't know if they're going to play that. I don't think they'll be back for the Travelers Championship in June. That would be, I think that would be a good way to start off the year, but I unfortunately, at this point, I don't think we'll be back for that. The earliest I could possibly see them coming back, really, and part of this would be the money behind it, because if we want to get into that Costas interview in a little bit, you know, FedEx sponsors the St. Jude Invitational, and it's that WGC in July, July 5th, so 4th of July weekend. I do think that if we're at all, like, if they can pull off that event somewhat safely, I do think FedEx will be beating down the tour's door to get that event played, to get the name, the brand out there, to get the name recognition, and to have them say FedEx however many times they're going to say in the broadcast, as we now know they're contractually required to do. So I could see that possibly as your first date, but really, guys, I think the summer could be done here, and maybe the first golf we're going to see would be the PGA Championship being played in August. I think that's what we can hope for now. I'm just hoping at this point that we can get the four majors in somehow and they figure out a way to do it, which if they can play in the fall, they'll be able to do it. So let's hope for that really at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I heard some rumblings about the Masters moving to October, and I'd be all on board with that. And it feels like that's, as you broke down to us in the text, like you said, that was probably the best option, because the grass at Augusta doesn't work well in the summer. It won't make it through the summer very well. So it's really good observations on your part, Mike. Yeah, we can talk about the Costas interview too. I mean, you asked us to, you recommended it to us. I took a listen. It was juicy. It was juicy. It kind of showed you the ins and outs of the broadcast industry and golf. And maybe it just confirms things that you suspected early on, but the level of control, almost that, I don't know how you would put it, but the way that they make the network sugarcoat things to pump up the PGA Tour, and the fact they require people to say FedEx and use FedEx Cup points, I mean, it's really ludicrous, but you don't think about it when you're watching it, but you put it all together in retrospect, it's pretty ridiculous. So I'm going to first go to John. John, did you hear that interview as well, the one that Mike linked us to in the podcast that he was on?
Unfortunately, I had lost it, so I did not listen to it. I'll have to go back and find that, so you guys can comment on it. I did not get a chance to listen to it.
All right, so, Mike, I mean, certainly you were the first to hear this spot. Costas was on the show. It's on one of the golf shows. I forgot what it was called, but
laying.
What was that? No laying up? Was that
the no laying up podcast.
Yeah, good show. Good show. I should listen to some other episodes, but yeah, he pretty much told it like it was. So let's get your thoughts.
Yeah, well, the big thing about it was it. You know, when I saw it there, I was like, okay, this might be juicy because he might come on and be all pissed off that he got replaced. But that's not really what the bulk of the interview was about. It wasn't about him being out at CBS and what's going on there. The big thing really that he got on, and which clearly is going on, is that the PGA Tour is just trying to assert this level of editorial control over the broadcast. And frankly, it just seems that their priorities are completely backwards. Well, at least completely backwards to us as viewers of golf. They may not be backwards to the sponsors of golf. Basically, I guess one of the big takeaways was that Costas was reprimanded by CBS, apparently after the tour pressured them to do so, because he wouldn't say what tournament it was, but he would interview the winner of the tournament. So he comes up and he said, hey, congratulations. You know, you're exempt for 3 years and you're going to be in the Masters. So congratulations. And apparently the tour flipped out that the first thing he didn't say was, oh, you just won 500 FedEx Cup points or whatever. So I'm frankly not surprised to hear that, because it's something that, you know, we'll talk about pretty often. We'll just mention it. So it's like, why are they incessantly bringing up the FedEx Cup at points where it really doesn't matter? It'll be like week one of the fall series. It'd be like, oh, let's go to our FedEx Cup season summary. It's like, guys, why does this matter right now? And basically what it comes down to is that as part of the contract with FedEx and the PGA Tour, the PGA Tour says your name will be mentioned either verbally or displayed in a graphic X number of times, and the broadcasts are then obligated to meet that if they want to keep their contract with the PGA Tour. So really, you just get a running advertisement for FedEx the whole time, and it's at the expense of showing more golf, which we should be able to see more golf. And the other big takeaway was that CBS has basically cut their production budget enough so that they don't have enough cameras to cover as much golf as they should be covering. And I think you really saw that at Torrey Pines, where John Rahm on the second hole holed out for eagle with his second shot, and CBS never showed it because they missed it. They didn't have it on camera. So that's pretty unfortunate, because CBS, I do think that for many years they ran a very good broadcast, but if they don't have enough cameras to run the broadcast, there's only going to be so much they can do. So, and then we know, obviously, NBC has the problems with having Azinger on. Although Azinger, John's mentioned this too, Azinger is not as noticeable on the NBC broadcast, because he just kind of lets Maltby and Koch and Faraday just kind of have this running conversation, and he'll interject. So he doesn't really, he doesn't have to dominate the broadcast as the color man as he'd have to do on Fox, where his shortcomings are more obvious. But basic takeaway is that the PGA Tour is trying to control the editorial on the golf broadcast. And with these new, since the Costas interview, what's come out is that the PGA Tour will run the production going forward for NBC and CBS with their golf productions, which that's going to have some bad effects. Because let me tell you, like, the big thing that's going to happen as a result of that. When you have, like, an incident where Patrick Reed moves the sand on a shot, I guarantee you the producers, if the PGA Tour is running it, are not going to show things like that, because the tour is just extremely driven by the players, and it exists basically to protect them. So they're not going to want the players to get embarrassed like that. So there's going to be, unfortunately, some negative effects to this new TV deal, with the tour being able to control actually running the production of the broadcast.
Yeah, I don't like that either. I mean, it did not sound good on the surface when Costas broke that down on this podcast. Very well said. I think you ran down all the big points. And with respect to that, you know, what it did for me, Mike, is it made me wonder about other sports. Because I feel like other leagues are doing it, just not on a severe level. I mean, certainly you don't see as much editorialization with, with baseball. But the NFL, for whatever reason, I feel like they do. I just feel like the NFL has a big hand in it. You really don't see them get on referees that much. When we had the domestic violence dispute, they didn't really get that critical of players in that scenario either. So it does make me a little curious. But let me go back to John. First, on the topic of the PGA Tour running the broadcast, I mean, it's a very scary proposition, but what do you feel similarly as far as the compromise involved in letting the actual organization do the television broadcast?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably not going to end up, you know, you're going to get very biased coverage, like Mike had mentioned. So I don't think that'll end up working out well. So you would wonder why CBS and NBC would welcome that kind of, you know, oversight into their broadcast. I mean, maybe they'll be getting more money. I don't know. But that just doesn't seem like it's going to be good for anybody in this situation, except for the players that are either cheating or doing, you know, things that are, you know, that they can be criticized for. But I did see that the tour TV deals got renewed, so that must have been a part of it. Also, as part of the deals, the tour is going to be on ESPN Plus. Specifically, the PGA Tour Live thing is going to be on ESPN Plus, so which is great. Because it's only $5.99 a month on ESPN Plus, and you get like just a shitload of like college basketball, college football, soccer. You get there's all sorts of stuff on ESPN Plus, and as of now, PGA Tour Live is. I mean, it's not expensive, but it's like I want to say $70 or $80 for the year if you want to get it. Obviously, you can't use it now, but when the tour is playing, but for only like. To add it onto the ESPN Plus bundle, it'll be so worth it because you get all those other sports in addition to the PGA Tour Live for just $5 a month. I'll subscribe instantly when that happens. And you know, for those who don't know what that is, it's basically before the network coverage comes on, whether it be Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday, they show you featured groups like early in the morning, so you could like you know if Tiger. You know, Tiger, Rory, and you know Justin Thomas are teeing off at 8 a.m. Well, if you have PGA Tour Live, you can watch like their entire round on like Thursday or Friday morning, which is pretty sweet. And then they have like featured holes and those kind of things. So it's a pretty neat service. And I heard it was going on ESPN Plus, which is excellent. So that was one good good feature of the new TV deal. And I guess consistency too to stick with CBS and NBC, even with this caveat that you guys mentioned, I do think it's good that they stuck with them as opposed to like giving Fox 15 tournaments. Could you imagine? I mean, that would just be a complete disaster. So I'm glad that CBS and NBC have the majority of the coverage still.
I think the next step from the tour's point of view in trying to control the editorialization of the content of the broadcast would be doing their own network. And we've already seen this with other leagues and other teams. The league networks don't bother me as much. I don't know why, but I would think that, you know, especially like MLB and NFL, like you'd think they would just be really rah-rah about their league and they downplay like things like CBA negotiations and so on. But that hasn't really hit me as much as individual team broadcasts, and that bothers me a lot. Mike, you certainly, from what you watch, I think I'm sure you're privy to team channels, meaning like, yes, the Yankees network and the Red Sox network with Nesson and so on. I mean, I followed it on a personal level for a while with the Dodgers channel, and I just did not like how Pollyanna they treated the Dodgers. Like, they'd never criticize anybody for anything serious. And I hated that. I'm like, I want objective coverage. I don't want them to just, I don't just want them to be cheerleading the team. Like, that does nothing for me. Like, I'm not dumb enough to just follow along with that. So I worry a little bit about that from the PGA's point of view. But do you feel a similar construct between the team networks that you see with, for local teams and various, you know, various parts of the country, and what could happen with the PGA Tour?
You know, I just see a general trend towards sports coverage where if you're going to watch a local network covering a team locally as opposed to nationally, it's like they don't want to give you objective coverage of the team.
I hate that.
They want their announcers to be cheerleaders and like overly positive. And I can tell you what the Devils are a fucking disaster. And you got Danico and Steve Cangelosi, and they will never come out and just say, this is a shit show. This team is awful. And, you know, it's just like, you could say it. You could say it. We're not going to turn off the TV, or we're not going to be more inclined to watch because you're misrepresenting the state of the team. And I think to people who watch closely and know what's going on, that type of overly positive broadcast is almost offensive to it. It offends our intelligence as sports fans. But I do think, though, at the other end, though, you know, you can see it by going through Twitter. There's people who are just, they always wear the rose-colored glasses, and I guess they don't want to upset them. Getting back to golf, though, you know, there was a pretty wild proposal on the table, which, depending on what you read, some people say it wasn't ever really that serious, but other people would disagree with that. And that was that, excuse me, that AT&T apparently made a big offer to the PGA Tour, and what they were going to do is they were going to rebrand one of their network channels as the PGA Tour Network, and they would cover most of the golf, I think Thursday and Friday, which if that had happened, that would have been the end of Golf Channel. They would have had to rebrand to something else, because I think if they had lost their PGA Tour coverage, I don't think a network that would just show European Tour and Australian golf and whatever would be financially viable for NBC. So that really would have shook everything up. Or if ESPN had gotten back in the mix for a lot of the weekday rounds for the tournaments, but that's not what happened. We're basically status quo, except for that whole production thing being different. And my guess on why they're doing that, Dave, is that, or why the networks would agree to that, is it's less cost for them. Off the top, the PGA Tour says, hey, we'll run this. You don't have to worry about it anymore. I guess that's their rationale behind accepting it. But, no major shakeups there. But it definitely seemed like there were some offers on the table which would have radically changed the golf landscape, at least for how we consume it on TV.
Yeah, that's interesting. Wow, that would have really been kind of, I mean, I would say disappointing, just because I think Golf Channel does a decent job with all their coverage, but it would have sucked for them, that's for sure. And then the other thing about what you were saying about like I guess MSG Plus, who do the Devils and all the other local channels, you hit that on the nose, because that's exactly how I felt like watching my own coverage of my own teams. Like, I feel insulted. I'm like, guys, I'm not that dumb. Like, you know, just tell me they stink. Like, can you please tell me that XYZ player stinks on this team? Because he does. It's like, can't you just be honest? Like, it's just unfortunate that they think that most people, and you know, the sad truth is probably true. Like, I think most people watching sports don't care. Like, they just want people to be positive and upbeat about the team no matter how bad it is. And I just wish those of us who have been brought up, especially in LA, because we brought up, you know, we were raised on Chick Hearn and Vince Scully, who were always very objective, and they were never afraid to say when the team was bad, or when a player was bad, and the same thing for the other team when they were good. It's like, I miss that in broadcasting. I just wish that we'd have more of that across the board, nationally, locally, on every level. And it's just annoying, because when you grow up knowing that you can broadcast something with a degree of intelligence and you can be respected for your intelligence as a viewer. It just sucks when you go back, when you go from that to just being just for all intents and purposes, a giant cheerleader. And I'm like, I don't need that. Like, I already am a fan of the team. You don't need to do that to me. Like, that annoys me. So John, I mean, for Mike, I just couldn't agree more on that. I really couldn't. And John, I don't know if you really get that experience as much, because I know most of your watching is college and pro football, where the broadcasts are not local anyway, so you don't really see it as much. But do you get the same feel as far as like local broadcasts for whatever you do see?
On a much lower extent, like the news here, like the local news here covers UConn. It's basically like our professional sport, basically. And, you know, not recently, but back when, you know, UConn actually had an okay football program, like, you know, the some of the beat reporters would just be, you know, posting like just the most ridiculous bullshit you've ever seen about trying to defend the coach or defend the team, like saying like after the either 2012 or 2013 season. This was like a year or two after you kind of made the Fiesta Bowl, and there were still a lot of good players on that team. They had like six guys drafted in the NFL, and this jackass reporter had the nerve to say, oh, well, there's just not much talent on this team for the coach to work with. Like, are you fucking kidding me? There was clearly enough talent to work with. The coach just did a horrible, horrible job. That's why they were 5-7 this year. So it's kind of like that kind of thing. Like, the media doesn't really challenge, the main UConn like coaches. I mean, Gino Auriemma, you know, no one challenges him, obviously, because he's basically a god here with all the winning he's done. But, you know, Randy Edsall goes 1-11 every year. I mean, they're not asking him very tough questions, which is kind of sad. So that's basically, I get it on that angle here in Connecticut. So that's kind of, I definitely see what you guys are saying. It's on a much lower scale here, but it's the same thing.
Yeah, and that's a very good example, John. I mean, it's just too bad that local coverage can't be a little bit more, I don't know, I mean, just more honest. That's pretty much all we're asking, and it's tough to imagine. It's just that ESPN gets very similar with its coverage of the properties that they own. Imagine how much they covered wrestling. I don't even know why they started covering wrestling so much. Like, because did they get some contract with them or something? Because they're showing reruns of the WrestleManias recently. But in the last, like, 3 years, they have really ramped up their wrestling coverage. It's like, guys, the sport doesn't even count. Like, why are we covering WrestleMania? Like, I don't understand that. I really don't understand. It's like, it's not even an actual sport. It's just entertainment. But it's just, I don't know. I don't even know what to say anymore. But, Mike, I'll give it to you for Potpourri. Anything else you want to talk about tonight?
No, not really. I mean, I guess I'll just touch on a couple sports. You know, I'm really starting to wonder now if we're going to see conclusions to the NBA and the NHL. With how things are looking now and the timeline of this curve, I'm just wondering if we're going to get to the point where they say, you know what, we don't want to do this, but we got to cancel the rest of the season and we'll pick it up next year. I know you're not hearing much talk about that really, but I just think if you look at how things are going, that's unfortunately becoming more and more of a realistic possibility, you know, with each passing day. So I hope that's not the case, but honestly, right now, it wouldn't surprise me at all if we don't see the NBA championship or the Stanley Cup awarded this year.
Yeah, I don't argue that one iota. I really think that we're so close to the point of no return with our projection. It's very close. Like, I think,
yeah, Dave, what happens if one player gets sick? If they go back and one player gets sick, like, It's so tricky that I think they're really going to have a problem trying to, you know, deal out these championships this year, even if they did so in an environment with no fans.
Yeah, I agree. And besides, it would probably take an additional month of them just practicing in order to get back up to speed to be able to play like regular games again. And to do it, so you need another month on top of that. And so if you just started it today, you'd be having people playing games around mid-May. And at that point, you can't even make up regular season. Forget that. It's just, you'd have to go right to the playoffs. And that's if we started today. It does not look like we're going to start. We're going to have this thing figured out by today. So, Mike, you're absolutely right. I feel like the odds are greater than not that they'll probably just pack it in and just try again next season. And that stinks for fans of the Lakers, fans of the Clippers, fans of Toronto. Who are the teams in the NHL this year? I can't even remember. It's not long ago. I can't even remember anymore. No, seriously, Mike, do you even remember who was good in the NHL? Like, I just forgot already. Let's see.
Tampa was good still.
Yeah.
St. Louis was good. So.
Yeah.
Boston good still. So.
Yeah.
I would think you would see one of those teams. I hadn't looked so closely at the West, to be completely honest with you. Well, but I think you would have seen Tampa or Boston probably getting through.
I think you're right about St. Louis in the West, though. I think that probably would have been the toughest team in there. I was just trying to think of my own division, like who was winning it. It was pretty wide open, so that's why it was tough for me to tell who was even winning the thing. I mean, there were different teams winning it at various points of the season. I mean, obviously, the Golden Knights weren't doing that great. They fired the coach, so I can't even evaluate that. And Kings are in the shitter. Ducks are not that much better. So it's kind of, I don't know. That would have been an interesting playoff. So we really will miss out on that. So that's too bad. John, any other thoughts you had before we close it up tonight?
Yeah, a couple things. I mean, we're almost to the point, even past the basketball and hockey playoffs, but we're going to start encroaching on football season too with this. And like you guys were saying, like, what's the protocol now? Like, what if, all right, like, say, you know, obviously we're never going to get to zero cases of this. But so say, like, we do end up starting things on time with football season, and then, like, you know, someone's left tackle gets positive for coronavirus after week one. Like, what do you do? Like, do you shut the whole team down? Like, do they forfeit? Like, this is going to be really interesting to see how this is handled, because you know at some point someone on one of these teams, when they start to come back to play, is going to test positive for this. So just another thing to be concerned about going forward when sports, hopefully, eventually, we'll say eventually, because sports will come back, eventually returns. But that's just going to be, you know, who knows how that's going to be handled. And the second thing is, so, you know, officially, like, all major sports were, I guess, shut down, you could say, on, like, March 12th. That was, like, that Thursday. But there have been some things going on since then. So what is, like, the craziest thing that you guys have either watched or, like, bet on? I'm going to say two things. First, I really enjoyed Australian rules football, which is the craziest thing I think I've ever said in my life. But it was really interesting because there was nothing on. It was, like, at 10 o'clock at night. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to watch this because it's actual live sports programming. And it took me a while to actually understand what was going on. I still don't understand 100%, but it's like a mix between rugby, soccer, and American football all put into one. And it was pretty entertaining, I must say. So if they do come back, and they were saying they're going to shut down till May 31st, I don't know how Australia is looking with all this, but if they do come back over the summer, I will definitely partake in watching that again. It was entertaining. And then secondly, I did place a bet on a Nicaraguan soccer match. So and that league is still going. So you can tell how desperate I am to make a wager on something. You guys don't got that beat. That's for sure.
I can't beat that. Honestly, I was just trying to, I was just trying to withdraw the money in the account, but stinking Bovada is forcing me into Bitcoin, or I told you about this. Like it was either that, or I had to put, I had to take a $100 fee to withdraw money. I don't even have $100 in there. It's like, what
right.
It's like, I can't do that. So I basically didn't do anything.
Well, Dave, the league is still playing. It's on Saturdays and Sundays. So if you want to pick, if you want to, you know, if you want some tips on Nicaraguan soccer, I'm your guy right now. So.
I'll give it a shot. I mean, hey, I haven't seen a sporting event in over a month at this point. Well, maybe like 2 weeks at this point. So it feels like 9 months, but it's only been like 2 weeks. Yeah. Now, you know what? I'll follow up on that. The craziest thing that I thought about in terms of things you could bet on or in the, more accurately, that you could do a fan duel with was the Democratic debate that was about a week and a half ago with Sanders and
oh
Biden.
Oh, my God, yeah.
I was like, could you imagine doing a fan duel on that and be, like, talking smack? Oh, my God, he said
that
this.
Was, yeah. That was a free contest they were offering, so you didn't have to actually have to pay
okay.
to do that. That was just, like, a fun thing for people to enter. I didn't do it, but I checked it out. But I will say, like, I'm a sicko for even, like, making a bet on a Nicaraguan soccer game. But I will say, I will never, ever, ever make a wager on, like, you know, video games. Like, there's all these, like, League of Legends and, you know, all these different, I forget the exact, I know one is League of Legends, but like, all these esports things that people are betting on, I would never bet on that. So, I will stick to like actual things, like athletic activities, to make these degenerate wagers on until like actual sports are back.
Yeah, that's well done. I mean, tempting as it may be to wager on the League of Legends, when you get into stuff you don't know about, you may as well be throwing your money away. This has happened to me multiple times with international soccer, and specifically, it happened with. What was it? I think it was a La Liga game. I got completely burned on it. And then there was another one that Timmy Russo was recommending. And I jumped. I think it was Liverpool or somebody. And I was like, I was way off. I lost.
I mean, at least with some of these things, like, all right, like I didn't even get to watch the Nicaraguan soccer game. It's not even on TV anywhere. There's no stream anywhere. So I'm just following it on like an app, like the score. But at least beforehand, you can look and see like what teams are good, what scores are. Those kind of things. How the hell are you going to like research a League of Legends game? Like, all right, does this guy like drink too much soda before he plays? Like, I mean, is he having problems with his girlfriend? Like, I don't know. Like, how the hell do you handicap that? I'm sure there's some kind of statistics or metrics you could use, but it seems so ridiculous to even try to attempt to find an edge there.
Yeah.
And there's also horse racing going on. My dad's big into the horses. So he told me there's horse racing going on, so I guess I could bet horse racing if I really had to, but that's, you know, I'd be pretty desperate if I had to do that. I'll stick with the crazy soccer matches.
Yeah, no, I think I feel more confident in Nicaraguan soccer over horse. I'm equally as bad at horse racing. Mike, have you tried any wacky sports or anything since the shutdown of the regular sports?
In terms of wagering... Nah, the only thing I bet on was the Liga MX, the Mexican League Soccer. And then once that got shut down, it's like, well, there's nothing else I can really watch. I know Turkish League Soccer was going on for a while too, but I don't think I ever got a bet in on that. So, no, it's kind of biting the bullet when it comes to the wagering. You know, I would bet on horse racing, but the problem is that they don't have the option to wager on horse racing on like the DraftKings app, because the way they have the wagering is through some other organization. So like, I'm not going to take the time to download whatever it is I need for that to do it. I don't care enough about horse racing to bother myself with doing that. I mean, if I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. But I don't think I've ever seen horse racing on DraftKings, so I'm not
going
to get
to that. I'll give you a heads up. So FanDuel has their own racing app. It's called FanDuel Racing, and you just log in with your FanDuel account, and they give you 20 free bucks to play with. So there you go.
That's a thought. We'll see.
I'm putting some bad thoughts in your guys' heads, but
the longer this goes on, the more likely it's going to be that I'm going to indulge in that if they keep up with the
exactly.
Going on. There's nothing else to do. So, yeah, I guess that will be something that's possible down the road. I guess craziest event that I've watched, though, is they had a NASCAR iRace with, like, some of the current drivers and retired drivers, and it was on Fox, or it was on Fox Sports. So iRacing is a racing simulator. So what they did is they had a NASCAR race on iRacing. It wasn't a full-length one, but it was on TV, and I watched it. So I guess that's the craziest thing I've watched so far.
iRacing, is it like a virtual race? It's not like an actual – are there actual cars, or am I thinking of something else?
No, it's a high-end video game. It's a racing simulator. It's a racing simulator.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what I thought. Because iRacing, I thought, was like a video game thing. So, okay, very good. All right, so I don't have a – unfortunately, I didn't get around to notifying Junkie of the show tonight. So I will do the random question myself. But it's not my question anyway. It's actually Tommy's question, Tom in New Jersey. He asked on Facebook, you might have seen this, Mike. You might have seen this too, John. What are 6 movies you have watched countless times and never get sick of? And you don't have to list them in any particular order. But for the purpose of the podcast, let's just limit it to 3 or less. Or if you don't have 3, you can just do 1 or 2. So, John, I'll go to you first. Can you think of 3 movies that you've watched a bunch of times and you have not gotten sick of yet? Up to 3.
They're like classic comedies. So, Dumb and Dumber, Ace Ventura, the first one, Pet Detective, and Step Brothers. Those 3, I could watch those any day and just laugh at all 3 of them.
I like the picks. That's especially for the genre of comedy. Those are some solid choices. So. I like it a lot. Mike, what would you select as your 3?
Let's go with Goodfellas, My Cousin Vinny, and I'll go with a classic one here, Animal House.
Man, 3 more great choices. Really great. Those are some really good choices. All right, so let me give you mine. I'm going to go Back to the Future, The Blues Brothers, and because I don't get... It's between Jaws and Monty Python and the Holy Grail. I'll probably go Monty Python and the Holy Grail. It's just incredibly quotable. So those are my 3. Yeah. Great choices, though, guys. That's pretty good. I mean, you know you're in good hands when you got taste like that. So let me see. Animal House would be celebrating its 48th anniversary this year. Ace Ventura would be celebrating its 26th anniversary. Dumb and Dumber would be its 25th. Goodfellas would be its 30th anniversary, Mike. Wow. Who knew? My Cousin Vinny would
hard
be...
hard to believe.
Yeah. Can you imagine? I mean, I know it was already set in the past, but that just to think that movie's 30 years old is crazy. And My Cousin Vinny would be its 29th anniversary, I believe, coming up this year. And then for my movies, it'd be 35th. Geez, what was Monty Python? That'd be like 46th. And 46th or 45th, depending on how you, when it was released. And then the 40th for the Blues Brothers. So, wow. So, classics for sure. For sure. All right, so let's give it to you guys for final thoughts. Mike, I'll go to you first.
Not much left to say here. It was nice having a chat with you guys, even if it wasn't about golf. It looks like it's actually be our 10th year of doing golf recaps. So we're going to have to wait a few more months, but it's been a really good run here, and I look forward to continuing it this fall, hopefully, when the we keep our fingers crossed and hope that the majors are played and that we have golf to discuss this fall.
Yeah, even if it's just one major, I would be very, very grateful to have it so that we can do our show and do a recap, because it's been a great run. Like you said, a decade long, at this point. So it should be great. John, let's give it to you for final thoughts.
Yeah, Dave, thanks for having us on and giving us a little diversion and talking for a little bit. Hope everyone stays safe, and, you know, if everyone stays inside and practices all this social distancing, sports can come back sooner rather than later. And that's what all these people down south need to hear, that if you don't do this, that there's going to be no SEC football this season. So I think that should be like the main motivator. Like all people should go on TV and say that, and everyone will stay inside for the next month. But
I love that.
In any event, you know, hopefully we all get through this healthy, and you know, on the other side, there'll be good things to come. So thanks again, Dave. You know, I'd be happy to come on again. I don't know. I wouldn't, maybe not next week, but in a couple of weeks, just to, you know, have something to do, basically. So thanks for the conversation. It was definitely a good time.
And I want to thank you both as well. I have not heard from you guys on the podcast in a very long time, so it's really great to catch up with you guys. So I'm absolutely happy to do this again. And I think if we do it in a few weeks, we'll probably still be doing this series. So that'll be fun. And please stay safe and stay healthy. Same to your family as well. I echo all the thoughts that John had. So guys, take care. Be careful out there. Wash your hands. All the good stuff. And down the road, hopefully we'll see you again.
All right, Dave.
Take care.
Take care, fellas. Thanks so much. And that's John, and that's Mike, and this is Dave, and that's our show. And thanks very much for listening, everybody. Hope you enjoyed that. Jay, so we're a bunch of episodes into this. Coming up next is the K episode. What will K be? It should be pretty fun. I do know this, so we'll reveal when we come back. I'm Dave Medina again. Catch us on Twitter @DidCow, on the web, didcow.com. We'll see you next time.